This is the June 16 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Aaron Curtis. He's at Midco Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Greg Johnson joins us from TGM Total Grain Marketing here in Champaign, Illinois. And Ted Seifert is here from Zahner Group at Zahner.com in Chicago. Mike Zuzlow also joins us from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. That's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's begin by getting a list of things that maybe we should discuss for the day. Aaron Curtis, from your perspective at the elevator in Midco, what do you think?
Well, today it seemed like we kind of finally divorced ourselves from the outside markets and focused back more on weather. Is that here to stay? We're back to kind of fundamentals on corn, beans, and wheat, or do we still have some influence from what looks like some negative action in the outside market still going to weigh on commodities here as we move into July?
Greg Johnson from TGM, Total Grain Marketing, your list or a couple of items?
Well, the first crop ratings came out for corn. We'll get our first crop ratings, we got our first crop rating for beans this past week. We've had two now for corn. And I know it's still early, but we are off to a good start if you look at the percentage of good to excellent. So I guess, it kind of ties into the weather, but does an early start or does a good start translate into a good crop later on down the road? Or how much weather do we still have to go through yet, I guess?
From the Zahner Group, Ted Seifert, what do you think about the discussion points for the day?
Yeah, I think the outside markets we got to pay a lot of attention to that because, this overall inflationary climate that we have in the markets is a very large component of the pricing that we have. If you look at a corn balance sheet, a 1.4 billion bushel carryover, you might say, hey, that's a fairly bullish number. Maybe that's 6.25, maybe it's 6.50 corn, but maybe not 7.85. So you have to understand that a lot of this is inflation, and what's happening in these outside markets and whether that inflationary bubble is bursting has a big input on what we have as far as pricing is concerned.
And finally, Mike Zuzla, GlobalComResearch.com.
Well, Todd, it'd be nice to hear from the others what they think of the new headline that busted out while we were taping Commodity Week. And that was from Reuters suggesting that Russia says it's assisting exports of Ukrainian foodstuffs out of the Azov Sea. So we know now, the Secretary of Agriculture and with this report, we know now that Russia is using Ukrainian grain and shipping it into the Middle East and North Africa. How is the market going to react to that, especially given the lack of political willpower that we've seen so far?
Well, let's start with the weather and the fundamentals for the day. Aaron Curtis, what do conditions look like on the ground where you are in McLean County, Illinois, typically the largest corn producing county in the state?
I would say overall pretty good, Todd. I mean, just driving around the county that I do, everything seems to be off to a pretty good start. Obviously, a little bit later planted than maybe some desired with the cool April that we had, but emergence has been pretty good for the most part. And this hot weather was almost kind of what the doctor had ordered in terms of getting things kind of caught up, so to speak. I think there's been a little bit of rumbling, right, of some corn rolling in the heat of the afternoon, but we'll view that at this point more of a defense mechanism than anything. But overall, I would say agree with what the USDA has said in the early goings on the crop progress reports. Potential is pretty high and everything looks off to a pretty good start. We did get a little bit of shower here in Bloomington last night, so that cooled things off just briefly. We got a little bit of cool down coming here over the weekend. But obviously, as we go into next week, going to heat right back up Monday and Tuesday. And if we kind of looking towards that GFS model of hopefully seeing a little bit more rain potential here at the end of the month, because I think we're gonna need it with some of these hot temperatures going around. So it looks good to start here, Todd, but obviously we need some moisture to kind of roll in here in the next week to 10 days.
I'll say that this probably reflects a good part of the northern two-thirds of the state of Illinois. Greg Johnson, I know you're in that part of the world here in Champaign County with me. However, TGM covers the southern third of the state primarily. What do conditions look like there? That is one area that has been suffering from drier weather than other places.
You're right, Todd. If you look at a 30-day precipitation map, there's 100 and some odd counties in Illinois. There's about 5 to 7 counties that are in the dry, abnormally dry category, and that Champaign to Effingham corridor is where those 7 counties are. So we seem to be in one of the drier pockets right now. But again, as Aaron, I agree with Aaron, if you have to be dry, now's the time to be dry. The hot weather has enabled us to catch up on the corn crop. It got planted 2 weeks late, but we probably picked up a week's worth of growing degree units because of this warmer weather. So we're probably only a week behind normal. The subsoil moisture is adequate to maybe slightly below adequate, but it boils down to if we get rain in July, we'll be fine. If we don't get rain in July, we won't. But as of right now, I think we're in good shape. You know, farmers are nervous. Farmers are concerned, obviously, because all it would take is a short crop and we're off to the races on the prices. But we don't know the answer to that yet. So for June 16th, I'd say we're in pretty good shape.
And Mike Zuzula, I'll turn to you lastly on this geographic spread because you're in Atchison, Kansas, right near the Missouri border, not too far south of the Nebraska border, that southwestern corner of the state of Iowa. What do conditions look like in your area?
It's pretty tough right now next to our state north into Nebraska, Todd, and as you go west into Kansas and deeper into Kansas and towards Colorado. And the drought monitor really reflects very well where we sit heading into this summer weather event potential and the potential drought that I think could be centered upon the Western Corn Belt, because Nebraska came in at just under a 91% some form of drought this week as a state. 1 year ago, it was only at 56%. And as far as significant drought, like D2 to D4, about 40% drought in Nebraska and only less than 2% a year ago. If we see these hot temperatures and dry weather manifest itself from Texas and migrate and snake its way into Nebraska, it won't take long to cook that crop, in my opinion. And they've also had in that part of the state, especially south of I-80 towards the Kansas border, and especially east of the center part of Nebraska, say from York, Nebraska to the Missouri, Nebraska, and Iowa and Nebraska border, a lot of freeze damage, a lot of hail damage, and some tornado damage as well. And some clients in south central Nebraska are reporting to me that they're worried they're going to lose about a third of their corn and bean crop already this year. So I think the Western Corn Belt is the heart and soul of whether we're going to take our national yield down at this point.
Do crop conditions, Mike, come down on Monday of this coming week, do you suppose? Actually, I have to think about that, whether the numbers are open, because Monday, depending on, because Juneteenth is so early, the holiday here on campus is Friday, but it's Monday for the CME group, and I don't recall whether USDA is open Monday or not. So when those crop numbers come out next week, will they reflect in large part what's happening out west, and how much might they come down, do you suppose?
I think they will, yes, Todd, especially if we stay hot and dry. The soybean condition coming in at 70% compared to 62% last year, it's opened a down move. 72% corn condition compared to 68% last year, I think you could drop 2 to 4 points in some of these Western Corn Belt states. Don't know what that'll do to the national average, though.
And Greg Johnson, I'll ask you the same question. What do you think the national average will look like when those numbers are released next week?
As Mike said, the Western Corn Belt states will probably bring that overall average down. You could see Nebraska dropping, well, they dropped 10 points last week from 75 to 65. They could drop another 4 points. Iowa was steady at 86 from the week before. They could come down a point or two. And then the Eastern Corn Belt states probably will be unchanged. So if you factor all that in, we went from 73 to 72% good to excellent on corn last week. I could see that being 70% when the numbers come out next week.
Let's turn our attention to some of the other things that were mentioned. I'd like to explore inflation just a bit, Ted, with you. This is something you mentioned. Inflation is running really hot at this point. Of course, this week, the Federal Reserve raised the interest rates by 0.75 points or 75 basis points. What are you considering in this marketplace, and what are your concerns?
Well, you know, for the last couple of years, inflation has really been a major factor in the markets that we trade. And it's not just grain markets, it's all commodity markets. And it's because, you know, of all the stimulus that has been flowing into the market since the beginning of the pandemic, what is it, 2/3 of every dollar that are out in the public has been printed in the last couple of years. But then at the same time, you have a stock market that is down 22% for the year. You have a cryptocurrency market that has completely imploded, which to some extent I kind of cheer on because it didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me in the first place. But the fact of the matter is that there is a tremendous amount of wealth destruction that is occurring. And at the same time, you have the Federal Reserve raising interest rates. So while we see inflation numbers still hot and heavy, these are all reflective numbers of where we have been, not necessarily where we are going. And at some point, inflationary bubbles burst. Go back to 2007, triggered by the subprime mortgage bubble burst, and then followed by the housing market really sliding very aggressively. That was another wealth destruction event that we have here in this country. And it took us from an inflationary time frame, a very hot inflationary time frame, into a deflationary time frame. And at some point, you get the feeling that's going to happen again. And we're seeing the cracks in the foundation already. The real question is, when does the consumer stop consuming as much as they have been? When do we start to pump the brakes? And that'll happen as interest rates start to rise and their credit cards preclude them from going to spend the money and living the lifestyles that they have been. So at some point that will happen. However, in the meantime, around me, I see everybody driving everywhere. Traffic is through the roof, worse than it was pre-pandemic, in my opinion. Restaurant traffic is really very hot and heavy. And while retail sales have been down, we've changed our spending habits into more activity-based things, going out, being with friends, doing the things that we weren't really able to do the last couple of years, and less going to, say, Home Depot and improving our households because we needed to do that when we were just stuck inside. Again, I think the inflationary bubble is not quite done yet. I think we may have just one more big blow-off top. But when that bubble bursts, you have to imagine that things can get really heavy from a price perspective. Again, go back to 2008 into 2009. You really didn't have a major fundamental change in a lot of these markets. But when you move to that deflationary time frame, you really take a lot out of these prices. And you wonder, even with a weather event this year, even with maybe lower acres because of planting problems for corn, is there a situation where we dropped to $5.50 December corn, even though fundamentally you could say we're just as bullish, if not maybe even a little bit more bullish than we were, you know, a couple months ago. So this is the thing that, you know, one day we really focus on. Today was more of what the weather was. You know, the CPC outlook for July was showing above normal temperatures and below normal precip for the vast majority of the growing area. That's a concern. We focused on that today. But in any other given day, and really since last Thursday, a lot of focus has been put on this wealth destruction that is occurring in the stock market and cryptocurrency.
Mike Sosolo, do you want to follow up on this topic for me, please?
Yeah, I think, you know, what Ted, I think, is really hammering on, and I think rightfully so, is the idea, in my opinion, I didn't take this away from Ted's comments, but I think the Fed said we want price stability over employment at this time. And, you know, if this is cost push inflation and it's mainly supply and weather driven, Todd, you've already got high energy, high food, high borrowing costs. And then you've got them taking away QE and actually tightening the credit markets by pulling back their bond purchases. Now you're pushing the button of raising interest rates. I think you really are in this time frame, you know, kind of shutting the consumption down. We just don't know how much. And the recent data from companies like Kroger and Walmart and Target is really mixed. What we can see right now is that people are still buying at the grocery store pretty heavily, but they're not going to restaurants. They're buying private label brands at the grocery store, but we're not getting much in terms of department store traffic as we go into summer. And so I think the Fed really is working themselves into a recessionary situation around the fourth quarter, because that's usually when these things hit historically.
So I'll talk now to the two elevator folks, Aaron and Greg. When you look at basis and think about the cash market, producers, of course, concerned at this point because they may or may not have some crop already marketed with the two of you, or they're just watching a crop in the field that looks good, but really worried about the weather through June and July at this time because it feels not quite correct. What should they do related to the two things? Because one of them says, hey, I might not have enough supply, the price might go higher, but what we're hearing from the other side of the economy is that this might drop out from underneath me. So how do they manage that, in your opinion? And I suppose, Greg Johnson, we'll start with you.
Well, number one, almost every farmer has crop insurance. So you've got a floor. Now, if you want to try to market above that floor, the only way to do that is to get some grain sold. And then if you want to protect those sales, obviously you can use options on top of that. But I think Ted hit it right on the head. If you have this bubble, we could see 550 corn even with a relatively short crop. On the other hand, any kind of weather issues at all, and we could have $9 corn, and the market doesn't know, and that's why we're kind of stuck here in the middle at 7 plus. It could go $1.50, $2 either way. As he was mentioning, you know, the outside markets, we had the dot-com bust in 2000, and we had the housing bust in 2008. Both of those years, we had good corn crops and good bean crops. So we've never really had a year where we've had this outside market bust combined with a poor corn crop or a poor bean crop. And I don't know the answer to what would happen if we did have the short crop and the deflationary outside markets, because we've never had that before, at least not that I can remember. So what farmers, I think, need to do is realize that there's a lot of risk in this market and you need to protect yourself. There's no doubt they can make money at these levels, assuming they can grow a crop. And so they probably need to get some floors locked in because there's probably downside potential. I understand there's upside potential as well, but there definitely is downside potential, and they should probably, you know, figure out some way to get some floors locked in on at least a third to a half of their crop at this point.
I think old crops fairly easy, Todd. I think it's you just kind of look at what the market's telling you to do, at least on corn, right? We've got basis levels that are, at least for the nearby, right, historically pretty firm. We've got a July SEP inverse closed today at 46 cents. Market's basically telling you, right, to get this old crop moved now because they want it. And it's pretty easy when you look at just the market dynamics on the old crop side. We think on average across the Midwest, there's about 10% of the corn left and, you know, 5 to 8% of the beans. We're not talking big bushels overall, at least percentage wise, right? But it is still some decisions to be made. And, you know, the argument would be, well, I want to kind of hold that as an insurance against maybe a new crop or something like that. But if you just look at straight market fundamentals are continuing to tell you just to continue to move this old crop. And, you know, we've seen basis really, at least on beans, kind of back off this week. So I think you got to be a little careful here. We've seen a couple bigger processors in Illinois start to back off on their bean basis. SIF beans continue to be under some pressure. A Brazilian farmer over the last couple weeks has sold a boatload of beans, no pun intended, but been very active selling. Brazil premiums now through the summer are weaker than the U.S. on a competitive basis. And we've seen China respond with being a very active buyer of Brazil beans here through August. So that's something that's got to continue to be on a producer's mind, because there's just a lack of competitiveness here for the summer now on beans. And, you know, we haven't had much of a corn export program here for a while. You know, corn exports this morning here were pretty poor. And, you know, this influx of business that we thought we were going to see from the Black Sea conflict when that started back in late February just hasn't materialized. So old crop's pretty easy. I think you just got to continue to reward this market and get rid of that old crop corn and soybeans. And then I agree with Greg, right? As we continue to see new crop rise up here on continued weather concern. I think you got to continue to reward it to get to that, you know, 25-30% area as we head into pollination.
Why have domestic end users backed off from their bids?
Well, a couple things, right? Crush margins, at least board crush margins, continued to weaken up. You know, today on July board crush, we closed right around 70 cents. We were over $2 here at the end of April. So board crush margins continue to fall apart, and that really speaks to what bean oil has done. It's really leveled off here in the last few weeks. But, you know, the function of the inverted market, right, is to bring grain to market. And you look at July, August inverse got to $1.02 or something like that. And that told, you know, producers, elevators to continue to move as many beans as they can because, you know, it's obviously worth more today than they are tomorrow. So that kind of spoke to a little bit of the break that we've seen. Now, it hasn't been necessarily everywhere, but, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we saw a lot of Western processors move to the August and kind of break bases back with it. And I think Western processors are a lot better covered as we head into the summer. I think there's still some coverage that needs to happen in the Eastern side, but really the function of the inverse is to bring grain to market, at least in a few spots in the Midwest, that seemed to be the case.
Mike Suslow, is there reason to be concerned about the export cancellation this week to undisclosed areas of soybeans?
Yes, there is. I think between the Indonesians going ahead and allowing palm oil exports again, Todd, and the big question mark, if I'd be interested in the other guys' opinions on this, because the big question mark for me of the last, say, going all the way back to the early 2000s, the big question mark for me is China going to be there in demand, whether it's going to be because they don't have enough demand because of their COVID policy and their organic growth really falls, or because of the trade issues and what's going on between the United States and Taiwan. I think if, to me, agriculture commodities, supply puts highs in the markets, demand puts lows in the markets. I don't remember a time where I've had more question about the demand side coming out of China. That makes it worthwhile doing puts this year, especially if you can get a weather market, and especially given this dress rehearsal that we have with the Juneteenth holiday on Monday ahead of the July 4th holiday. So we've kind of got two bookended three-day holidays that I think the market could be very volatile and maybe help us a lot in terms of locking in some good floor prices.
Meaning Memorial Day, Juneteenth, and then the July 4th holiday. Ted Seifert, what do you think of the soybean market at the moment?
You know, I'm not quite as worried about Chinese demand. You know, I kind of have a feeling that China has some longer-term goals, expansionary goals. Obviously, Taiwan and the South China Sea to start with. And I think they're doing whatever they can to sort of stockpile because they know that the Western world is going to, well, really have a problem with that and probably want to stop doing business with them as much as possible. So stockpiling is really what they're doing. I really don't think that a lot of these shutdowns that you're seeing are COVID related. I think that's really just an excuse to try to shut in demand in order to build these stockpiles faster. When Russia went into Ukraine, China had the golden opportunity to coordinate that and go into Taiwan, but they didn't do it. They weren't ready. In the meantime, you know, you look at their hog herd, and these are the things that we know, and that has grown for the first time in a year. So they are rebuilding their hog herd. Prices are starting to rebound for them. And this is happening even with the shutdowns going. So I think as the shutdowns lighten up, if the shutdowns lighten up, that demand will grow. And I think China will continue to really need beans. My question is more domestic, as was mentioned earlier, that crush margins really fallen a lot because of the soybean oil. If that continues to happen, you start to see crush slow down a little bit. So that is a concern. But, you know, for the old crop soybeans, it's really hard to be bearish. You know, it's a tight enough situation that any sustainable break, you're going to see other countries come in and step up and buy. And just on export sales this morning, we're still running at an elevated pace for old crop export sales for this time of year. We're still selling beans on a fairly large scale. So I don't know. Between now and August, I just don't see a whole lot of downside potential for those old crop soybean contracts. The new crop is a little bit of a different story. But then again, really everything. By the time we get to the end of August, you might have a very, very different climate, not only in these markets, but just the market in general. So I like the idea. Owning puts, I'm okay with selling some calls against it in new crop. I'd like to own some old crop calls to protect the ones that I'm selling out in new crop. But having a floor in these markets is really not a bad idea going forward.
Okay, so I'd like from each of you, and this is about new crop only, a bearish, bullish, or neutral, and really only that, just sort of so we can set the tone for the end of this conversation, and to give us some kind of flag to put in the ground on things. So Aaron Curtis for corn and soybeans, bearish, bullish, or neutral for new crop?
Yeah, I'm friendly right now. I think there'll be a little more weather premium built in. I think we'll see D's corn go up and try that old high there around that 765 mark and see how we act then. But I think there's a little more upside here in the short term.
Greg Johnson?
I would agree. I would say neutral just because longer term, I think prices could be lower by fall, but in the short run, probably higher before we go lower.
Ted Seifert?
Bullish in the very short term, rather bearish for the long term.
And Mike Zuzlow, plus I want Mike, you to follow up with the idea that you're thinking about Russia and the export market.
At 0 to 45 days, if weather and the dollar can come together, I'd be bullish both corn and beans. Bullish with compliance, knowing that that means get hedges in place and not, you know, trade my way around the market too much. 45 days plus, I'd be more bearish, meaning more hedges and especially more in the soy complex.
And I wanted you to talk a bit about Russia. You mentioned this. They're probably going to move, of course, more grain into the world marketplace, as was announced on Thursday afternoon.
I think part of the bushels are all, that were trapped are already moving into the international market. That's in part why I think we're seeing the exports not perform like they should, given the held up exports in Ukraine and what the market was expecting and the disappointment in the market, quite honestly, Todd. And I think part of the bushels remain trapped, and those bushels, I think, become a quality issue and also lost in the field as far as new crop. So when I see a lower EU crop, a lower hard red crop here in the United States, and an Argentine crop that's getting smaller because of their weather issues, I really wonder whether futures in the wheat market as a global trade is not really pretty discounted because we expected this grain corridor to open up.
Ted Seifert, the export market out of the Black Sea?
Yeah, you know, I don't see much in the way of movements occurring anytime in the relative near future, at least not much more than what is coming out of Ukraine via rail. Russia likes to say one thing and then kind of do the other. And I really do think that's the case here. They want to sound like they're participating in opening up a grain corridor and allowing those exports to flow. But the reality of the matter is, you know, do we even have people in place at the ports in the Ukraine? How do international vessels feel about sailing through these waters? What sort of insurance are they able to get for that sort of thing? What's the condition of the ports? What's the condition of the grain in the silos of the ports? I don't see that movement. Even if this conflict were to end today, which it isn't, I don't see that moving in any big way or getting anywhere near back to normal for another 4 to 6.
Let's wrap up our discussion with a final word from each of you. Greg Johnson of TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com, from the elevator here in Champaign County, Illinois. Your final word for the day?
I think farmers have been slow on the trigger this year in marketing, and that's been the right thing to do so far. They sold too much last year, and as a result, they're kind of on the other end of the pendulum this year, and that's fine. But we're getting to that time frame, the 4th of July, when the market tends to tip over. And I think it's a good idea for farmers to really get caught up on their marketing plans and have orders in place over the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Mike Zuzlow at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, otherwise at globalcomresearch.com.
Yeah, I think Greg hit it on the nose here with the idea of take advantage of this market. I think the big thing out of the Fed policy that I thought was that the chairman of the Fed thought that the consumers were in a good place. I think that's kind of like transitory inflation. That was probably 2 months ago.
Ted Seifert from the Zahner Group.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. You know, really everything we're talking about here, we've got some very good prices and we have some cracks in the foundation in the form of the stock market, cryptocurrency, inflationary bubble burst, Fed's raising interest rates. There's a lot of black clouds on the horizon. And when you have a market in December corn that's going to offer you 660 December puts for the same price of 860 December calls, and you can buy a put that's 75 cents away from the market and pay for it by selling a call that's $1.25 away from the market, you have to take advantage of that structure, because that will change dramatically once we start to roll over to the downside. So the opportunities are there. We might have one more big inflationary blow off top here at some point over the course of the next month and a half. But in the next month and a half, you got to be really aggressive on what your marketing plan is going into the fall and possibly into the next couple few years.
And Aaron Curtis from Midco.
And continue to keep an eye on the old crop market set up to kind of listen to what it's telling you to do, and that's to finish selling up old crop corn and soybeans, especially if we get a continued bounce in here and new crop. Still like to be in that 25% to 30% area in terms of some sort of risk management strategy here over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We continue to play this weather game.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may hear the whole of our program anytime you'd like. You can do that on our website at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find this program along with our daily closing market report and a link in the podcast section to the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. Also information from the agricultural economist, the crop scientist, and the animal scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Aaron Curtis from Midco Commodities at Midco.com, Greg Johnson of TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com, Ted Seifert of the Zahner Group at Zahner.com, and Mike Zuzlow from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Find him online at GlobalComResearch.com. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.